encourage private charity to homeless people. For, after all, sleep is a human right. I also urge this council to reissue the resolution that you made on June 27th, 2000, in which you directed staff, specifically Ken Cole of the Homeless Services Center, to compile a list of businesses who would be willing to have one or two cars parked at night in their parking lots for sleeping purposes. You passed this resolution 7-0, yet no further action has been taken. Ken Cole was not even aware of the directive until Huff Advocates brought it before him. And likewise, City Manager Dick Wilson told Huff he would only enact the resolution if you told him to do this twice. And if your law makes sleeping illegal virtually everywhere, out of doors or in a vehicle between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., your time is up. There must be places for people to sleep legally. Please find these places and return with these FYIs today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Chris Hurdley moved on to the next speaker. That's Mayor Crone. Speaker Johnson's request for FYIs was completely ignored, and no such FYIs were sought.
Hello, my name is John Tilking, and I'd like to speak in favor of the proposed change in the ordinance back to what the original intent was in 1999. However, I also realize that that real ideally is not going as far as I'd like it to go, because I think also that the three-day limitations concerning parking in a driveway may be unnecessary, and I would like to see those eliminated as well. But if the ordinance change is to be made that you can allow unlimited time in church parking lots, backyards and side yards, and in business parking lots, that would be agreeable for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Next speaker.
Hi, Brian Kepke in 115 Coral Street. Since nobody's opposing this, I'll just say thank you. And thank you.
Thank you too, sir. Next speaker.
Council members, members of the community, Robert Norris speaking for Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. First of all, of course, thanks to Mayor Crone, to the absent Vice Mayor Riley, to Councilmember Porter, and to the other council members who spoke up on this issue at the last meeting, and no doubt will be voting on this at this meeting. I don't see much opposition to this. Three members of the City Council have kept their word to the homeless, and I would say the rest have as well on this issue. This will be the first attempt to restore homeless civil rights since the council was elected in November of 2000, with clear commitments at that time by several of the council members to end the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. But what homeless civil rights are being restored? Rights homeless people had 2 months ago. The right of a private homeowner to let a homeless person camp on his property under limited conditions, and the right of a business person to let two homeless people lucky enough to have vehicles park in their parking lots. That's nice. But what has any of this to do with the survival needs of homeless people tonight? The 1,000 to 2,000 outside who face $54 tickets, move-alongs, searches of their possessions or other harassment, those who aren't fortunate enough to have this access to the Good Samaritan on private property exception. For those who aren't the lucky winners, there is the ISSP program and a few scattered emergency spots, no more than 165 in all. That's for 1,000 to 2,000 people outside. Why does this need to be said again and again? Because the Sentinel and the Metro and the Good Times and the City Council don't discuss these figures, don't print these figures, because they are so shameful in our community. We know some who weren't the lucky winners. Michael, the one-armed man, murdered down along the river after the protective cover of Camp Paradise was withdrawn. Darla Gafford, whose body was found just outside city limits in early January. Those who have suffered beatings, vehicular confiscations, tickets, lost jobs, harassment, what does this amendment do for them? And of course, the answer is nothing. What could the council do? It overwhelmingly heard from the community in the winter of 1998-99, that's 3 years ago, demanding by overwhelming majority sentiment abolition not of the camping ban, but of the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. And two members of this council spoke eloquently and persistently at that time in favor of those rather elementary human rights changes. But here we are in March of 2002. I'm sorry to say that the mayor and no progressive member has attempted to do anything since Catherine Byers thwarted this compassionate road back in the summer of 2000 with the destruction of the safe and legal places to sleep. Voters have not even been allowed to have this issue appear on the ballot thanks to the negative votes of Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar. So I do thank you for restoring this technical problem that arose when it was ineptly formed, the wording for the three-day exception. But it's hard for me to thank you for restoring private hiding places that the few homeless people have, and then just say, well, now you must do more and give you a list. I can't really do this because this council already has a list. The council's own homeless issues task force, some of whom sit in this chamber tonight, issued more than 24 recommendations. They're in a binder, sitting in the city council offices, gathering dust. The reports have been written. The evidence is in. When homeless people try to shelter themselves, as Camp Paradise did, they are threatened, schmoozed, and then ignored. The Coral Street open-air shelter encampment saved lives in this city back in 1995 before it was closed. Portland's Dignity Village, Seattle's Kent City 3, Isla Vista's Camp Home Sweet Home, and Toronto's Camp Goodwill all are homeless encampments run by homeless people because their city councils would do nothing until they set up those encampments. I am hoping, well, I'm not hoping that you're going to do nothing because I'm afraid that you are going to continue in your current course. But I would ask you to not only ask for the FYIs that Becky Johnson asked for earlier about the June 2000 resolution and about the other one that she asked for, which slips my mind at the moment, but we also need the FYI what happened to the Crone resolution to have bathrooms and porta-potties situated in the industrial zones. We need to know what's happened to the porta-potties downtown, and we need you to seek public-private partnerships on these issues since it's so hard for the council to proceed alone. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, I was given 5 minutes to speak because in a public hearing, organizations are customarily allowed 5 minutes. So for those who want to speak on behalf of an organization, I would encourage you to contact Mayor Crone at his council number 420-5023 at City Council and tell him that you are with an organization, name the organization, and ask for 5 minutes to speak at the public hearing that's coming up in the evening, March 26th, day after tomorrow. That's a suggestion. And again, you can speak on the entire camping ordinance. This is about camping ban amendments. And you note, my speech covered not just this very, very specific issue of the three-day, but the broader issue of what should be changed here and what is pertinent to the issue, but what is not being changed. So, again, if you want to get in touch with the City Council and tell them, and tell the community, since these things are televised, you can get 5 minutes if you are, in fact, with an organization and speaking on behalf of a group. Continuing with this discussion at City Council on the camping ban corrections, as I call them, the minor corrections. A debate that will be concluded in 2 days.
I'm going to bring it back to the... Very briefly, sir. Okay, we have people waiting for another item. Go ahead.
My name is Jeff Everhart, and I reside in Santa Cruz. I was born in Monterey, and I'll be very brief. I'm just here in hopes that I will witness a follow-through on the stipulated corrections to the ordinance, which were discussed 2 weeks ago at the evening session. And in a broader sense, I hope we move toward a comprehensive set of proposals to address the homeless situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to bring it back to the council, Councilmember Premack.
Well, just a clarification. It's my understanding that an item cannot be placed on the agenda by more than three council members. That would otherwise there would be a Brown Act violation.
Right. Four council members can't meet outside and make a decision.
There was some question as to why there are only three council members signing this, and we're limited to three who can sign.
But also, I thought I heard everybody was sort of on board last time we met on another issue, and we had talked about this and gave direction for that to come back. Councilman Porter.
I'd like to throw out one. I had several phone conversations with people regarding this item, and so one of the things I think it would be fair to say is that, assuming that we pass this, which I believe we will, we would probably want to have staff tell us in 6 months if there have been problems with code violations and that sort of thing. And the other point that was brought up to me is, would this allow unlimited numbers of people to, say, reside in somebody's backyard in a tent? And clearly that's not our intent. The intent, when it was discussed in 98 and 99, was to have two or three people be able to camp in these situations in places where they're not visible.
Porter is wrong on both counts. There was no discussion of yards or tents in 1999, only of business parking lots and vehicles, and vehicles in church parking lots and vehicles in driveways. So he's actually proposing a more restrictive law. This is the man who was elected on a commitment to the Green Party to end the sleeping ban forthwith. And he hasn't even brought that issue up, and now he's proposing restrictions. It's kind of ironic that he's doing this. Sounds like in response to conservative sentiment. The second problem here is that he's asking for an FYI in 6 months. That's for your information report from the staff. Interestingly enough, there were FYIs requested on the entire camping ban, amendments that liberalized the camping ban back in 1999, minor cosmetic liberalizations, which included lowering the fine, allowing for business parking lots and driveways. reducing from a misdemeanor to infraction, saying if the Winter Armory shelter is full, then tickets will be dismissed after they've been issued and people have been harassed and had to go to court and so forth, or have lost their space and been driven along by the police. There, too, they requested a six-month FYI, and no such FYI was ever forthcoming, just as in the summer of 2000, when Councilmember Crone got unanimous approval, as you heard from Becky Johnson, of a resolution asking, directing the city manager and the Homeless Services Center director to look into places for people to go on private property that the city could purchase or make arrangements with. Not only did Dick Wilson, our city manager for life, refuse to do that, but when we brought it up in a letter, he said he wouldn't do it until he got additional direction from city council, which the city council then refused to give. So I only mention this because there's so much bullshit that goes down at the city council, and it is portentously put together as though it were real substantive statements that you could actually believe the words coming out of the mouths of these people. And unfortunately, you can't. And it's important. You don't know this unless you know the history of what's gone before. This is almost a small procedural issue. They're removing some words from the camping ordinance that they didn't have the courage to remove 2 weeks before, so homeless people have to suffer a six-week interval of uncertainty. Presumably the police are not going to enforce a bad old misinterpretation by Kennedy and Barrasoni, but never can tell. Doesn't become legal until a month from Tuesday if it's passed, this restoring the you can camp in backyards and side yards with the permission of the private owner for more than 3 days per month. Right now, I know plenty of people who are illegal thanks to the failure of this council to make the changes in an emergency vote, which they could have done a month ago.
Well, I'd like to know whether other council members think that on page 20-3, section I, camping DI, there should be a restriction on the number of people. And with that in mind, I will move that the council introduce for publication the ordinance amending 6.36.020 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code pertaining to camping. Second.
So Porter is now proposing more restrictions on the number of people in backyards, side yards, and front yards when there has been no such restriction before. And to his credit, you'll hear Crone essentially dismiss this. And so the Porter resolution seconded by Crone eventually passes 7-0.
What if we just, if you give it 6 months and it comes back automatically to us and we get an evaluation, and if that, or sooner, if that presents a problem, or if that becomes a problem, then we amend it at that time to put numbers in there.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly satisfactory.
Any other comments? I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, passed unanimously 6-0.
One of those rare occasions when you can clap sort of almost off the cuff for city council because they're not really doing anything in any meaningful way except rectifying one of their own errors, and one that required a lot of activist energy to get them to address at all. It's sort of a depressing chapter, but they did correct it. Now this from David Rovix.
Is mourning the death of Mother Jones. Grief and sorrow hover around the miner's home. That grand old champion of labor has gone to a better land, but the hard-working miner miss her guiding hand. Through the hills and over the valleys, in every mine and town, Mother Jones was ready to help them. She never let them down. In front with the striking miners, she always could be found. She fought for right and justice. She made a noble stand. With a spirit strong and fearless, she hated that which was wrong, and she never gave up fighting until her breath was gone. the workers all get together and carry out her plan and bring back better conditions for every laboring woman and man.
Payday at Coal Creek, album by David Rovick's Death of Mother Jones, an anonymous song. But we don't have an anonymous person on the line with us, and actually calling from Isla Vista is, well, why don't you sign in, caller?
Hi, Robert. This is Jenny Jett.
Hey.
Isla Vista, how are you doing?
Hi. It's good to hear you. I know that you've been involved with the, Camp Home Sweet Home down there? And what is, how long is, this is an encampment at Isla Vista that originally was in a park, what was the name of that park?
Anna Squirrel Park is the main and the largest park in Isla Vista. It's right across from supermarkets, downtown Isla Vista.
Mm-hmm. And you've been working with kind of different commissions and groups for several decades trying to get some protection for homeless people down there. I guess services have been declining rather than increasing, right?
Yeah, that's correct, but really hasn't been several decades. It's been about 3 years, but it feels like several decades. Mm. Meeting after meeting, just trying to get a space, where homeless people could be, where there's, you know, where there's not tickets and safety, where everybody's together, and try to build some services up from there.
And I know that you're kind of an old timer in Isla Vista. You've been there for at least a couple decades, right?
Yeah, I've lived here for that long, which is kind of unusual because most of the town is fairly transient, in the correct use of the word, because most it's right next to the university.
Hello? Uh-oh.
Well, it looks like we lost our caller. Maybe she'll be calling back shortly. That was Jenny Jett from the homeless encampment down in Isla Vista, which is right next to the University of California at Santa Barbara. And they are, of course, going to be coming up to the Homeless Summit May 3rd and 4th, along with folks from Dignity Village in Portland. And we're going to try to sound out. We hear there's some new encampments over in Sacramento and Santa Rosa. And we want to get everybody's expertise together to see how we're all doing, as well as to be supportive of each other in these times. As you know, affordable housing essentially devolves to a vehicle or a tent for a lot of people. That's just how it is. And it's important that people who have no place to go not be turned into criminals just because of that. And people need to stand together, and people need to be supported to stand together. And it looks like we got our caller coming back.
Hi there, Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I guess we got cut off.
Yeah, well, you're back.
Back on
here? Yeah.
What I was saying was that we are right next to the University of California, so there's a lot of transient population of students, but there's a few of us that have been around here for a while.
And what about the homeless population that lives, you know, in Isla Vista? Are they as transient as the students, or are they folks who actually had a kind of a history there but who got driven out of their housing, or?
Well, as usual, I hate to generalize, but there are probably at least 50% of the homeless here have been displaced from apartments that they had.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and how many homeless people do you estimate are we talking about?
Well, do you want to count students?
No.
There's probably, you know, roughly, I would estimate probably about 50.
That's actually rather small. Up here in Santa Cruz, we estimate 1,000 to 2,000. I guess we estimate a smaller number of homeless students, I guess 40 to 100, something like that. One of our homeless students, or homeless campus dwellers, I should say, because we've got a big green campus. Is there a large campus in Santa Barbara similar? Santa Cruz is kind of unique in that regard. I think it has a pretty huge green campus. Is it? How large is the Santa Barbara campus of Isla Vista?
It's, I don't really know compared to Santa Cruz, but UCSB is quite a big school, and they own almost all the surrounding property of Isla Vista.
Now, is there sort of a... Sorry.
That's all I have to say.
Is there a sort of a kind of a gobble mentality like we see here at the university in Santa Cruz where they are, you know, they're sort of like a huge machine that keeps expanding like a cancer and then eats up all the housing in the surrounding area?
Historically, Isla Vista has roughly been considered a big bedroom for UTSB. And although, you know, the enrollment was down a while ago, and there were a lot of vacancies, there were a lot of empty lots, there was, you know, all that. But as the enrollment has increased, almost all the land has been developed, and there's almost a zero vacancy rate on apartments. And they are currently and have been starting to buy up commercial property and all this stuff.
Now, I know you approached, you have a kind of a special park district there. It isn't really a part of the county in the same way that other jurisdictions
it's
are.
A district.
And it's not a part of the city of Santa Barbara or the city of Carpinteria or the...
We're an unincorporated area of the county of Santa Barbara.
And that's put you in a unique position because the police have suddenly found that they, not only are they going to have troubles with the camping lot because of the necessity defense that attorney Glenn Maurer in Santa Barbara, which is pretty close, has been using, and he's been attending your meetings and helping you, but there's actually the absence of a camping law entirely, right? Because there's just no, that both the county and the city laws don't apply.
That's right. They've apparently, unknown to us, for the last 20 years, they have been enforcing the county camping in the park, and they just found out recently, as a result of people pitching tents in the main park, they researched it and they found out that in fact they had never formally adopted the county law into the park, and so therefore people had been getting tickets when there actually was not a law on the book. And currently we have no law, so right now it's completely legal to camp, sleep in all the parks.
So naturally, thousands of homeless people have all picked up their hobo bindle stiffs and headed toward Santa Barbara and Isla Vista, right?
Well, I don't know about Santa Barbara, but there's been an increase in homeless people sleeping in the park. This story broke.
And has this caused a lot of problems? I mean, do you have a lot of behavioral problems, or do you just have more people?
I don't really. The park district has problems. They're looking at it as a problem, and some people came to the meeting last Friday and mentioned that you know they had seen more people in town, and so they're concerned about it.
Well, they're concerned about it. And from your estimation, are there people smashing bottles and getting drunk and breaking windows and causing trouble, crapping in the sidewalk?
I haven't seen any of that. No.
So is it pretty much being self-regulated by the homeless population there?
Well, like I said, there's about 23 parks in IV, and what's going on in the other parks, I haven't really taken a close look at that. As far as the camp that's set up right now in the old Teepee Village in Teepee Park, everybody, and from the beginning of this whole thing, which I think it's been maybe 40 or 50 days now, the people have been, you know, kept the camp really nice and clean. Even the park district admitted to that at the last meeting. They said, you know, you guys have really, you know, really done nice. It's peaceful. There's not a bunch of rowdiness. Everything's kept clean. And, you know, so they've admitted to that.
Now, this is Camp Home Sweet Home, and you were mentioning, what, about 15 tents?
There's probably about 15 tents.
And that's for about, what, 20 or 30 people, or?
No, I think there's probably about 15 people over there.
Yeah, so
there's some people that are also, you know, nearby in the streets in vans. We have there is a homeless shelter in Santa Barbara. Now, apparently they're only open during the wintertime. So, from what I hear, they're about to close in a couple weeks.
Ours is closing on April 15th.
People are going to go. There's probably about 200 people down there.
We're talking to Jenny Jett of Isla Vista and Camp Home Sweet Home down in the Santa Barbara, the Isla Vista area. And you, I guess you're also planning to come north to the Homeless Summit here in Santa Cruz, is that?
May 3rd and 4th.
It is.
I'm going to try to make it.
And are you bringing any of your rascally homeless?
Where are we going to sleep?
Well, we don't have, it's not legal to sleep in the Santa Cruz parks unless you have $1 million insurance policy and a pat on the back from Parks and Rec czar Jim Lang. So we're going to have to find you some places to sleep up here.
Well, I should come with a couple people anyway.
Definitely. I understand that you have activists down there, and enough said, Nancy McCready, as I call her. She's been working with the homeless, the Santa Barbara Homeless Coalition.
She's doing a really good job in Santa Barbara. She's been working on the effort to make it legal for RVs to park, and they're trying to come up with places for the RVs to park, and it looks like, you know, they may be able to find a spot.
Yeah, her work with the group Homes on Wheels actually kind of inspired some local activists here to form a short-lived group called Homes on Wheels in Santa Cruz, which actually still may be around. If you check voicemail, that's the Homes on Wheels person local. I note you also have been working, you had sort of an unusual meeting with the Parks District where you had so many people who were in favor of homeless people or the right of people to legally camp somewhere.
We had an awful lot of support for the homeless. An awful lot of students showed up who were in support of the homeless cause and, you know, wanted to... That meeting was about whether, because they had drafted an ordinance, and I think that their intention was to pass it right at that meeting. And because there was a lot of support, a lot of people spoke, and
a lot of opposition.
It seemed a bit draconian. And so, you know, we all pointed out different things with that. And so the Park District voted to form a committee to discuss different wording of the ordinance and people's needs and people's concerns. And so that's kind of where we're at right now.
I know that some of your folks were ticketed prior to this meeting when they still thought they had a camping law, but and the fact that they don't have a camping law mean that those tickets are all going to be thrown out?
Well, Glenn is handling this. My part of it is to just, you know, I've just been driving people, giving rides down to the court, and now the arraignment date is set for the 29th, which is next Friday, I believe, and so we're all going to head down there and see what Glenn does.
How can people get more information? I guess the way to get more information is to give a call to the Huff line for all you local yokels who want to hear more about what Jenny Jez is talking about down at Isla Vista at the encampment down there. And the phone number to call is 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 4833. But is there should people try to reach you directly, or do you prefer they contact me?
Sure, they can. I give my phone number out, that's fine.
Go for it.
It's area code 805-685-2050. And I'd be really interested to know, you know, if anybody out there has any ideas about what we should do from here. Again, what we have, it started in the end of January. The weather got cold. Two homeless people died within 30 days of each other, which was a shock. And although I've been trying to, you know, work through the whole system, going to all the meetings and everything, trying to, you know, get a legal outdoor living space for homeless people, this was getting nowhere very quickly. And so what happened was some people just said, hey, we're just going to go camp in, set our tents up. And so that's what happened. We figured that everybody would be arrested within, you know, a couple of days, and for some reason we weren't. And what we didn't realize at the time was that there actually was no law in the parks. They checked into it, thought they had adopted the county law. Now because of that, they aren't able to do anything, so the camp has moved to another piece of Park District property.
That was an attempt to...
We're trying to get it... You know, they want to stay there. They, you know, it's the best everybody's had in a really long time. So the tent provides shelter from the wind, the rain, the animals, the bugs. It offers privacy. They have a place to put their things so that they can, you know, go about their business during the day. And there's a bathroom there, so it's the best things have been for everybody in a long time, and they want to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. So where are we going to go from here? Right now, the Park District is working on coming up with an ordinance, and they want to stay where they are. Pretty soon, there'll probably more than likely will be an ordinance.
Well, my advice.
So we don't know where to go from here.
You know, my advice on this is as it was before. I don't think the main reason they didn't go after you was because they didn't have an ordinance. I mean, they went after you with tickets before they knew they didn't have an ordinance. But I think the reason that they stopped may be the same reason that they stopped going after, or at least they were deterred from going after Camp Paradise, and they deterred from going after Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, and deterred from going after Tent City 3 in Seattle, Washington, is because they knew that people were going to fight back legally and peacefully, and they were going to, and that they would cause such a stir in the court of public opinion that there would be a real, you know, a real problem created, particularly since they had no alternatives for these folks. And I think that the key issue here is always, can you maintain an ongoing campground that's self-sustaining and has a lot of community connections and support? That's what Camp Paradise did. That's what, as I said, these other places did. And you know, if you can, you know, then that really becomes the main focus of trying to do that, rather than, and then you worry about, you know, blathering with the authorities. When you have to talk to them, you talk to them, and they come to you, and then they start making their deals and their offers and their proposals. But as you pointed out, you made offer after offer before this camp was set up, and they just sort of completely shined you on, right?
That's That's correct, especially because we're under a redevelopment agency right now, and they plan on putting an awful lot of money into Isla Vista.
Don't want no stinking homeless in Isla Vista.
We needed to start at the bottom to rebuild the community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just when a lot of times with development, a lot of people get displaced and they're not taken care of. So, here, you know, the homeless now have taken care of themselves. Right? They always say...
What a concept.
Homeless should help themselves. You hear that all the time. Now they went, we tried to get help, the services have gone down. So now they help themselves. They pitched a tent and made their life better. It didn't cost anything.
So,
the problem with everything is that, you know, we are in a county area. And so the county has rules, and zoning is a problem. Now the park district said, well, we can't let this go on because it's in a violation of a county zoning law. Although we haven't actually, I don't think they've actually gotten a letter from county zoning.
Well, you know, I think it has to do with the fact, I mean, they're going to find regulations to limit what you're doing, even if there were no regulations. What you need to do, as I said, is to make sure that you have the broadest possible public support, and you're making reasonable proposals, you have good media contacts, and I'm hoping you can develop some of these more by exchanges with folks who've done this by coming to this this summit on May 3rd and 4th. And I guess you have a couple meetings coming up. Is there anything you want people to do to be supportive? Do you want them to write the Parks Department supporting the right of people to sleep somewhere legally or this particular camp? Or?
That would be great. In fact, I think any letters that you send to the Park District, whatever you do, we don't think that you should, make the homeless people's life worse than it is right now. In other words, they have something good going right now. How can they take that away?
How about getting me an email address for the Parks Department, and then I'll have people who want to send out some support contact the Huff line. Anybody out there in Radioland who wants to be supportive of Jenny Jett and Isla Vista's Camp Home Sweet Home, can call the local number 423-HUFF. I'll get you the email, and then you can tell the Parks and Rec to work with the folks, not against them. Jenny, I want to thank you for being with us. Anything you want to conclude with? Hey. Oh, well, thank you for letting me know what's going on down there.
Email address right now.
Well, just
get www.silcom.com/-iv-park.
That's for Parks and Rec?
It's for Parks
and Rec. And if you didn't get that, just give a call to 423-HUFF and I'll give it to you. And if you can, give that to my producer there, and she can perhaps make a note of it and pass it on to me, and I can put it onto the Huff line. Hey, thank you for calling. We've been talking with Jenny Jett of Isla Vista, California. Hey, thank you.
The more shall I work in the factory and greasy up my clothes, the more shall I work in the factory, splinters in my toes. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say, pity me, my darling, and carry me away. The more shall I hear the bosses say, boys, you better dog. No more shall I hear the bosses say, splinters better clean up. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say, pity me, my darling, and carry me away. The more shall I hear the drummer wheels rolling over my head, when factories are hard at work, I'll be in my bed. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say, pity me, my darling, and carry me away.
And we're on the phone with, why don't you sign in, caller?
No, I'm John with the Santa Cruz Coalition of Freedom of Man, All Political Prisoners, and also the All People's Coalition, Santa Cruz Chapter of All People's Coalition, which formerly has been known as the Progressive Federation.
Speak up a bit if you can, John.
Well, anyway, the All People's Coalition of Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz chapter, has formerly been known as the Progressive Federation.
Gotcha.
And we have one more forum for this month. It's called the Art of Nonviolence for Social Change. It's 326, same meet day as the city council meeting, unfortunately. But that's at 7 to 9 p.m. at the Vets Hall, 846 Front Street, in room 22, that's upstairs. We'll be having Jeff Everhard, Becky Johnson, Nick Kelso, and Zoe Enbinder.
Enbinder, yeah.
Binder. The woman who is
I haven't seen her around town.
Sitting at the table.
Yeah, blocking the sidewalk, I remember that.
And then Pixie, the hippie planner activist, whoever that is.
Oh, yeah, Pixie. Wow. You know, it's interesting. I may be in the lockup because we're going to be doing some protesting at city council. And, you know, we're going to be doing constitutionally protected activity, but apparently the Constitution doesn't really go very far in Santa Cruz. There's a press conference at 6:30 at city council, and then at 7 o'clock there'll be oral communication. So maybe if we can, at least I'll try to get over there afterward, assuming I'm at liberty, although you never can tell what they're going to do there.
And I just wanted to put out also an additional plug that there are some ballot initiatives being circulated in Santa Cruz. And I just completed an analysis of the latest one that is being circulated. It's called the Traffic Congestion Relief and Safe School Bus Trust Fund Act. And basically the breakdown goes along the lines of 17% of the funding and the initiative goes for constructing and improving light rail and commuter rail lines and bike paths. It also includes bike parking facilities. And then there's 16% for highway interchange improvement and widening of selected highways, which some people may not like, but it's only about 16% of the funding for that. And the rest of the funding is 16% for transit service expansion, 10% for transportation impacts mitigation, which is providing wildlife corridors and paths for the birds and deer and all those guys to go alongside your freeway, 10% of it. And then 8% is actually for the safe and clean school bus account, which replaces school buses manufactured prior to April 1st, 1977 that do not meet current federal motor vehicle safety standards.
And if you want more details on this, you can always talk to one of our fine petitioners. Where do you hang out with that petition there, John?
Well, just about anywhere, you know, like New Leaf Market or...
We hope you don't patronize New Leaf Market.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Safeway or whatever. Those places around.
Well,
it turns out to be a pretty good initiative. I was anticipating maybe half the money would go for widening freeways, but it's really only 16%, so that's pretty good.
Cool. Well, now if we'd only drive some of the vehicles off that freeway and sleep in them at night without being arrested, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Thanks, John. Any more you want to add?
No, that should do it. We also have trying to get a ballot measure signed, which would protect all growth trees from being cut on public and private land. And there is an exemption in that initiative for any tree that's next to a structure. If it's threatening the structure, then you can have an emergency exemption. But other than that, it would protect any tree older than 150 years from being cut.
And I imagine that'll be at the farmer's market on Wednesday if people want it.
Farmer's market as well, too.
So what's happened to Michael Victim Fine, the fellow who was arrested in the lockdown up at the Empire Grade protest?
I haven't heard anything recently on that. He was supposed to pay restitution in order to avoid having himself charged with a felony. He was reduced to a misdemeanor as long as he pays restitution of some $1,300 or something. But we tried to get him a job doing petitions, and he didn't do it, so I don't know what's going to happen now.
Well, thanks for the updates, and keep it up.
All right.
Thanks, John.
And phone lines are open, but we're reaching the end of the show. We only got another 15 minutes left. 427-3772. 427-3772. We have a quick update from, we'll try to get Camp Paradise and see if we can get them on the old line. We had some trouble with that before, but we may get lucky here. They're often in their HQ over at the Santa Cruz Service Corps, and they can be reached at 423-8636 if you're interested in trying to reach them. Usually during the weekdays, they're reachable, though. On Sundays, we've always been able to get through in the past. For some reason, it's ringing and ringing, and we're not getting through now. So that's too bad. Maybe on Thursday, when I get back from the 6 to 8 show, I'll be able to tell you that evening what's cooking with Camp Paradise. Now I'm going to try to reach activist Richard Quigley, who's sort of a citizen litigant, and I reached him earlier, and maybe I'll catch him now.